just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
All right, welcome everyone. It's Saturday evening here in the east, 10 p.m., 7 p.m. in the west. We have a new show here. I'm Stephen Roberts, and with Suzanne Posel, this is Boomer vs. X. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you.
We have a brand new show. We don't have Unraveling the Secrets anymore. Angel is
No, I think we unraveled all the secrets.
Yes, yeah, I think we did.
We had a huge pile of yarn, and it was growing, and it was encompassing the entire room, so we figured we had to do something else.
Yeah. I, just on the off chance, I forgot to open up the chat room there to see if anybody is in there. So, excuse the loud noise we're going
to
hear.
You're listening to PSN.
Got rid of it real quick. Hopefully we won't get any kind of feedback or any there, but we shouldn't. We're going to talk about a few things here. I believe we are only decided that we are only going to do an hour now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to do an hour. We want to focus on current events, understanding the perception that we have of our current events, and that can only be justified through how we were raised and what was going on in our generation. And this is, to me, this is extremely important, because when you understand where people are coming from, where you're coming from, what was big when you were a child, which affects how you treat your children, how you vote, how you shop, who you choose to marry, how you feel about marriage, what kind of job you choose, whether or not you go to college, you name it, the question that you had, the direction you took in your life, all the way down to the color shirt that you like to wear, has a lot to do with where you came from and your background and what was going on when you were a child. And what's interesting to me is that we have basically two generations running this country that really don't like each other.
Yeah, hence the name Boomer versus X.
Exactly. The baby boomers are now in charge. They are in power, and they have unleashed police state. These are the same people who were free love, man, and talking about my generation, you're always putting us down. I hope I die before I get old.
Yeah.
Anybody over 30 is not trustworthy, right?
That's the way it was, yeah.
So Gen X was raised with, hey, here's a key. I'll be home by 10. Put your dinner in the microwave. Make sure that you do the dishes before you go to sleep. I don't have any money for your college because I'm busy working. So here you go. Here's a community college, and you can get a two-year degree, and you can go off and get a job. Completely different way to grow up and completely different mindset. And so I thought it was important to discuss this, especially with current events, with understanding what's going on in our world right now. It's so tumultuous. And we've got two different views, a view of a generation who had abundance growing up and took it for granted and created the Wall Street that we know today and the police state that we're enduring now. And then a generation behind them who were neglected, who got whatever job they could, kept their head down, had all their homes foreclosed on them, lost all their businesses. And we're not sure what to do next.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you really want to think about it, the today's police state actually started taking place, I don't know, back at the turn of the 20th century, or maybe even a few years before, when they first started bringing in police forces in the cities and that.
Oh, absolutely. During the industrial age, that's where you get the idea of the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Because they had the workers revolting, and this had never happened before, and they didn't have the idea of a police officer was even less than it was in the 70s, right? It wasn't anything like what we imagine now. And the idea of an organized group of police officers that go out to deal with situations of any kind, crowds or apprehending somebody in their home when they don't, or a standoff or something like that, that didn't exist back then. They created that out of the protests that happened, to unionize the workers, to save them from the horrible conditions that they were working under with the corporations.
Oh, yes, yes. I don't know. The police used to be quite a bit different when I was a kid than what they are today. At least, seemingly, I know we didn't have YouTube back then, but, you know, I was a kid. I was, well, I don't have any trouble admitting it, but I was able to drink at the age of 17. The beard that I have now, I was able to grow when I was 17. A full, thick, brown and reddish tints way back then. But, you know, I had one. I was able to go into bars and drink liquor at the age of 19. Not even got card. I didn't even get carded until I was 24, actually, Suzanne. So, you know, I've been.
They didn't have seatbelts.
No, they didn't.
They didn't. Thank Nader, they didn't have seatbelts.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't start the click it or ticket until the the early to mid 80s or something like that, I think. And
well, yeah, Nader really went hard on the auto industry and said, "Look, you know, you've got all these great cars coming out with the boom in the 50s and the 60s, but people are dying in crashes and they're flying all over the cab of the car, and children are in danger, and we need to mandate these seats or the seatbelts rather."
Yeah, yeah, but. No, I was going to mention that, you know, whenever we would get pulled over by the police or whatever, or we got caught or whatever, I was only hauled into downtown one time for drinking. And
normally the police drove you home and told your father what happened, and then you got grounded,
Got the snot beat out of you, yes.
Exactly.
But
the police actually drove the kids home, talked to their parents,
or
and
called
left,
somebody,
and that was it. That was the end of it.
Poured it out right there in the road or whatever, or in the back alley, wherever you happen to be, you know, and... You got all your liquor that you saved up all kinds of money to buy. You got it all poured out on the ground, and you had to watch it, and then you got taken home. But
totally different now. If a kid gets caught drinking, he goes straight to CPS. The parents get alerted. By the time they get down to the station, their rights have been revoked, and they go into a kangaroo court, like the family courts, and spend 2 years trying to get their kid back.
Yes.
Big difference, drastic difference in what? The span of 2 years. But you know what's funny? In my generation, the children were always being taken. They were always being found dead. Adam Walsh was huge, and it happened two cities away, about 45 minutes from where I grew up as a kid.
Uh-huh.
My mother, several years after Adam Walsh was taken, we were in a Sears, and I got lost. And my mother was absolutely beside herself. She still talks about it to this day.
Yeah.
That's how much fear was placed into the boomers' minds when in the 80s, and they had children, all this stuff about kids being abducted, kids being shot. Every single day, you heard about some kid, 4-year-old girl, who was gunned down in a drive-by shooting with all these gangs, remember?
Uh-huh. How old do you think Adam Walsh would be?
I think that he was 8 when he was murdered.
And that was when?
And that was in the early 80s, I'd say 81 or 82.
It's been that long ago
I was
now?
Very young.
Huh. Has it been that long ago now?
Oh, yeah. And then it sparked America's Most Wanted. His father, they both lived in Florida, and so it was a big deal in Florida. Everything that happened to them from that moment on was always in the papers. The husband and wife got a divorce. John Walsh went on to do America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
So we were watching this at 8 o'clock at night. The Gen Xer kids, you know, my generation, we were all sitting around with our TV dinners watching America's Most Wanted and watching Cops. And so the world became very scary. Our parents kept saying, don't talk to strangers. Keep your key around your neck. Don't tell anybody that you're home alone. You know, maybe a neighbor knew in case you needed help. Here's my phone number. Here's a list of phone numbers. I won't be home till 10 o'clock. Take care of yourself and take care of your siblings and lock up the house. Make sure you lock up that house. That's the world that I grew up in. Very terrifying time. Even though we were the last generation to go outside and play and come home when the porch light came on, there was a sense of you could die at any moment, and you really have to be vigilant, even as a small 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old child.
Yeah, yeah. We had to. Well, I take that back. We didn't have to. We finally did start locking the doors. My mother, she had bought the house that she lives in 1967 when I was just 3 years old. My brother, she was actually pregnant with my brother when my parents bought the house. And we never locked the doors until actually a cousin broke into the house. My mother's nephew broke into the house, and I think probably, I don't know, somewhere around 89 or 90 or 91. One of them years, somewhere in there, he was a late teenager then, and it finally took about a week to get him, to figure out who broke in and stole a bunch of money and that. But we didn't even start locking the doors until then. And then, you know, all of the stories about child molesters and stuff started coming out. So, I mean, I don't know. It was just crazy. The 70s were just a lot easier times. People could leave their doors unlocked. You could trust your neighbors a lot more then. But, you know, you was able to talk to your neighbors back then.
Right. I mean, I grew up in a small town, and we all knew each other. And the one time, the very one time that I skipped one class, everybody knew about it. The vice principal was waiting for me at my school bus before I got on after school and dragged me in and called my mom. And I got yelled at by the bus driver, and I got yelled at by some of the parents who were waiting with their kids. And I got yelled at by like seven people before I got home. And that's where I grew up in. And I was very fortunate in that. But then the latter half, the teenage years, we moved to Miami after Hurricane Andrew. Very different world. I grew up in a place where every other parking spot had a corral, and people would tie up their horses, and you had to drive, and there was cobblestone road in the downtown area, and you had to drive 5 miles an hour because you might hit a horse. That's where I grew up.
That's
so
all
going to Miami was extremely a huge culture shock, but that's where the culture actually was happening. And I understood a lot of other things that didn't make sense as a small child more as I got into the city and understood how city life is. It was really like the country mouse moving to the city, like the country mouse and the city mouse story. Do they even tell that story anymore?
I don't know. I tell you the truth. I don't know.
Everything is just absolutely, absolutely different. And I wrote an article this week about Obama's free tuition. So have you heard about this?
I've been hearing little stories about it, yes, but go ahead.
All right. So essentially, Obama wants to offer a two-year degree at a community college, quote, free for anyone who is willing to work for it. And that went up on the White House Twitter feed. And I went through the documents on the White House website, and what he wants is if you can maintain a 2.5 GPA, which, by the way, I graduated from my two-year college with a 4.0. But you have to have at least a B-minus average, and you have to commit to going into a program, an occupational training program, with a high school graduation, a in-demand degree or a certificate. This is a compartmentalized worker position. And this reminds me of the Industrial Revolution, the Industrial Age, when you had machinists who built the machines, who knew the machines and worked them. And while in the beginning their relationship with the corporations was amicable, it became unreasonable. The way the corporations were treating the machinists was unconscionable, and they threatened to walk off and take their machinery with them because they owned it. That would have put these corporations out of business. So what the corporations did, instead of working it out with the machinists, they decided to figure out every single aspect of the machinist's job, including every aspect of their machine, and recreate that over 100 jobs or over 50 jobs or over 1,000 jobs, thereby replacing the machinist and creating the compartmentalized worker who only knows what they're trained to do. And if they are outside of that range, they cannot function. They just don't know what to do. Some people know how to drop a pin into a hole. Some people know how to turn a screw. Some people know how to put a belt on a machine. But if you get the belt man to drop the pin in the hole, he doesn't know how to do it. And I know that's a simplistic example, but what Obama is doing with this now is the necessity for technology. We have a demand for technology. We're moving into a full-blown technical revolution. The International Consumers Electronic Show is going on in Las Vegas right now, and I've been covering that. The stuff coming out of that industry, well, it's just basically a giant native advertising article. It's really just a big commercial. But this is what's going to be sold over the course of the next 12 months. And what you're going to be implementing in your home, what you're going to be seeing people walking around with, what we're all going to be talking about is invading our privacy. And so I like to pay attention to things like that, not because it's trendy, but because trends change the course of action. So with education, giving a 2-year free degree for someone who's willing to work in a technical industry, gaining a technical skill, and promising to work in that field in lieu of repaying the tuition is, to me, a clever way of recreating that compartmentalized worker, where everybody has a job, sure, but you can't think for yourself. There's no need to think for yourself. There's no need to have an opinion. There's no need to have a discussion. You are trained to do a function. You perform that function. Your shift ends. You punch out.
Yeah. Just more worker bees to conform to the hive, if you want to call it that, the Borg hive.
Absolutely. But it seems like we're cyclical. It seems like every couple, maybe every 80 years.
I think it's 72.
Every 72 years?
Right. I've heard that number.
A full human lifespan?
I've heard that number.
Well, maybe. I don't know if it's...
There's this theory out there that every 72 years, a society comes full circle and what was old becomes new again. People were, I think, 72 years, well, I don't know when the 72 years is going to be up, but 70-some-odd years ago or 60-plus-odd years ago, people were fiercely conservative, and things started to change after the war. They became to loosen up. The 50s, the drug and sexual revolution really started in the 50s, and it really took hold in the 60s. But it's going to take this time around to that amount of time to change people's minds.
I see what you're saying.
I'm not saying that total stereotypical conservatism is good or bad. It's just I don't know. I think people need morals and honor more than they need conservatism or liberalism.
Well, I get what you're saying. The Silent Generation, they all got married as virgins, or mostly. And in the 60s, you expected to have an open relationship and you went to key parties, or that was in the 70s. But it's still the same people.
Right.
Drastically different ideas about what was appropriate. If I had been born a couple of years earlier, getting a 4-year degree would have been, that would have been it. There would have been no other choice. Because I was born at the time I was born, when I got to my college stage, the technical degrees had just come out.
Did they?
And everybody was like, oh, wow, I can get a degree in 2 years or a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to go to a 4-year college anymore. That's wonderful. And I said the same thing. I was like, wow, you mean I could be a paralegal and I could be making $80,000 a year in just 2 years of college?
Do you know right now that someone who wants to get a nursing degree has to have a master's?
They should. Have you been to any hospitals lately? You want that person to be overeducated. You hear me?
Well,
they are going to be putting stuff in your body, cutting you up.
Yeah.
Giving you stuff that's allegedly going to heal you, you want them to know as much as humanly possible.
The way I understand it, many, many years ago, people didn't, doctors had to have degrees, but doctors had to have PhDs, but the nurses were virtually just about as smart as the doctors were, because they trained with them for years and years and years, and they stayed with the doctors, and nurses just pick things up.
I have a couple of friends who are RNs, and getting that status, you have to jump through a lot of hoops and go to a lot of schooling, and rightfully so. And it's just like with the paralegal, and it's shocking to me that you only need 2 years to get this degree, because basically the paralegal does all of the legal work, does all the research, spends all the time in the building the case, making sure that the case law that they're citing fits the case or fits that defense that they're going to be using in court. It's a lot of meticulous work, and you can make or break a case by what you find. And the lawyer is just going to take your research in and read it off to the judge when he steps into the courtroom. And it's the same thing with the nurse. The nurse does all of the actual work. The doctor just comes in there and makes a diagnosis, looks around and makes some recommendations and tells them what to give and how many cc's to give. But other than that, the nurses are doing all of the actual work, and they absolutely should be as educated as humanly possible. And it's a good thing that it's changed from doctor knows best only in the 50s and the 60s to this is a holistic thing. I'm not saying that the medical community does a really good job, because I was just at the hospital and they did a really fantastically horrible job. But that having been said, the expertise of the people who are actually doing the work is, in my opinion, and proof by the fact that the RNs have to go through all of this schooling and is a recognized staff member in hospitals now, just as recognized as the doctors, that is the necessity, and they should have that status because they do all of the grunt work.
Yes, they do. And they are, well, the hospital that I spent in, in the hospitals that I've been in the past few years, because I've had 8 operations and this diabetic episode a couple months back, about a month back, they are grossly overworked and probably underpaid for the work that they do.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. But that has to do with status. And that really has to go back with the perception of the general public when it comes to the medical community. You know, it was astounding in, what was it, the 80s? And the 70s, I think, when men started to go into nursing. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
They were like, what? A man? Wait, nurses? There was this whole idea of what a nurse was, and she had a whole outfit.
Yes, she did. She wore a white suit with a, what are those hats called? I don't know, but you know, they had
that
the outfit.
Paper strangely folded hat.
Yes.
Pinned with a bobby pin.
Yes. Yes.
Big white shoes.
Yes. You've seen too many old movies, haven't you, Suzanne?
I have. The white stockings and the white sneaker shoes before there were sneakers and the skirt that went down to her knees, and then she wore a cardigan over it and a belt and she had her thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, with the red cross on it. Yeah, exactly. And it actually did exist in real life too. It's not just the movie era.
Not just the television thing or the movies, yep.
Yeah, exactly. And then when men wanted to go into that profession in the 70s, it was like, oh, whoa, that's a woman's job. Men don't do that. How insane. It's the same thing with the fact that RNs and nurses in general know more about patients because they're actually doing the work than the doctors do. The doctors come and read a chart. I used to work in a hospital. I know what the doctors do.
Did you?
They come in, they read a chart, and then they look over the patient. They look over the notes from the nurse. They talk to the nurse, and then they make a recommendation. Well, it seems to me that the nurse is doing all the work and giving the doctor a suggestion. And so what is the doctor getting paid all that money for? Why does he have all that prestige?
Who knows? They spent 8 years at a college, I guess. I don't know, for a PhD.
Well, that just means they can charge you more money for their services because they have a boatload of bills
right,
to pay.
Right.
And student loans.
Yeah. It's really too bad that, college is the way it is. This is a little odd. This is a little bit weird. I can still remember to this day as a senior, the college is coming to my high school. Back in 1982, just before Christmas in 81, the college has come around. University of Notre Dame is 8 miles from my home, the campus, and I'm only 200 some odd miles away from the University of Michigan and 140 miles away from Michigan State.
But that's how it was back then. That tokens back to the 50s. Yeah. And even before, when the universities actually came out to data mine and to meet the students, they were looking for a specific caliber of person, even down to the way you look.
Yeah.
And they didn't want anybody who didn't represent Ivy League colleges, respectfully, in their eyes, what they deemed as an image for their college. That quickly changed. like when I was a kid, we were watching like the Babysitter's Club and everybody was like writing letters to colleges asking permission. And you got a letter, whether or not you were, remember Say Anything? The whole movie was about her waiting for that letter to get to that college,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Colleges then didn't care. They didn't want to take the time to come out anymore. It's almost like the caliber of person had dropped off in their eyes to the extent that they didn't want to pay the money to have someone travel across the country and recruit people into their college.
Yeah.
That's an amazing statement, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, well, I guess what I was talking about earlier was in 1981, to go to University of Michigan, it was $7,000. To go to University of Notre Dame, it was $7,000. I think Michigan State was like $6,000. A junior college like Ball State or I think there's one in my southwestern Michigan here, SMC College, Southwestern Michigan College. It's a 2-year degree college, and it was like, I don't know, $1,100 or something like that, $1,200 maybe. But, you know, times have changed.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like $6,000 a semester when I got my degree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A semester. Wow.
A semester. somewhere between $4,000 and $6,000 a semester. And I got my 2-year degree done in a year and a half.
Well, you know, I thought about it because in 1983, I bought my first car. It wasn't nothing to write home about. I mean, it wasn't a... it wasn't a chick magnet, if that's what you want to call it, but it was a Chevy Chevette. If you know what a Chevy Chevette is, it's there was a joke way back then that it was called a Chevy Shove It because it was normally broke down on the side of the road and you had to shove it somewhere.
Oh, like the Geo Metro.
Yeah, like the Geo Metro. And but anyways, I paid $1,800 for that car, and it was just 3 years old when I first got it. I think
I remember my father had a Toyota for like 26 years.
Uh-huh.
He never had a car that long. And he just got tired of it and got rid of it. It's not like it broke down or that it, you know, it needed repairs. Now you purchase a car, you're lucky if you get 10 years out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I see
same
a lot
same industry, right? Yeah. Same companies, GM and Ford, and right?
I see a lot more of the older trucks out there on the road, the pickup trucks, you know, from the 60s and 70s and 80s. Then I just don't hardly see anything from like say the decade of the 2000s. There just aren't a lot of them out there. They just don't
well,
last
where
anymore.
I live, I see a lot of even older, like the Ford 100s.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah.
And these are all farm trucks. And yeah. You can tell because they are beat up.
Yes, they are.
But when we go into the city, when we go into Seattle, all I see are Priuses and those little tiny smart cars. And everyone's got a brand new GPS, semi-autonomous, you know, beautiful car, plastic piece of garbage car all over in downtown Seattle. It's absolutely millennial yuppieville.
Yeah, I know. Times are different. I think they probably call that job security now with the auto industry. You know, make a car that only lasts 5 to 7 years when 30 years ago they made a car that lasts for forever just about.
Well, sure. Planned obsolescence. It worked great for light bulbs. So, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? You know, and here's something funny. And here's another thing about education. So my husband was driving home, and we live in a very hilly area. We actually live on top of a foothill. And his brakes went out.
Yes.
And he had to pump the brakes and get the car home. And he was driving down a hill because there's two ways to get to our house. You either have to drive down a hill or drive up a hill. And he got to the house, and he's a mechanic by trade, and he took the passenger wheel off the car and started screaming obscenities and ran into the house and grabbed the camera and started taking pictures and screaming obscenities. What had happened was in September we had new tires because we knew the winter was coming, and we had them installed at a well-known company that uses fire and stones, but I didn't say their name. And when they installed the tires, the technicians who are supposed to do this part of the job, because it's the last part of the job, make sure that none of the, nothing is touching the tire. And guess what was touching the tire? The brake line. So since September, we've been driving With this brake line rubbing against our tire, at any moment it could have snapped. When I was in the car with the kids going up and down these hills, my husband drives highway miles a couple times a week. It could have happened. He could have had a horrible accident in downtown Seattle because of it. And these people who deal with fire and stones were so ill-equipped to do their job, apparently, that the technicians didn't look over their work before they presented it to the customer. And that to me says a lot about our education system and what we collectively think is a successful job, especially when we're dealing with things like the medical industry or the auto industry.
Yeah, I know. You don't think any buy-off chance that might have been deliberate or anything, do you?
No, it's not. My husband's a mechanic, and when he took the tire off, he explained to me exactly what happened, and he showed me where it was rubbing against the inside of the passenger side tire. It's not. Nobody was trying to cut our brake line.
Yeah.
It was actually worn and down. It was worn down. If it had been cut, it would have been a clear cut, but it wasn't. But this is negligence by technicians. Now, how many cars do they install new tires on daily? How many people are driving, unbeknownst to them, at any moment that line is going to snap, and then they're going to be in a situation that they might not even know how to handle and get themselves hurt and other people hurt, simply because the education level at the technician level is obviously so laxed, and the pride of the worker in his work is so laxed.
Lax, yeah.
That we have a situation where people are operating machinery and don't know if it's safe or not, and don't even assume that it's not safe. We have people in hospitals assuming that they're getting good care because they're in a hospital and they need medical attention, and they may or may not be getting the amount of care or the degree of care that they deserve because the person is not trained in order to do that. And then we've got Obama here saying, hey, colleges, students, guess what? If you go to a two-year college, and you get a small degree doing some technical skill and learning for a very short time. And let me explain to you, my mother worked in the medical records department in hospitals, and part of her job was to hire coders. And with the two-year degrees, and I was actually in school getting my paralegal two-year degree at the time, and I remember this conversation because I would come in after school and help her prep charts and scan them into the computer. And she told me, you know, these coders who are coming out of these two-year technical schools do not understand what the coders that I have now who were trained 10 years ago, and they're glorified receptionists. They're not even able to code. They don't understand enough of the medical terms to be able to code properly. And so I think about that when I saw what happened with our tire. And I think about that when I think about Obama's two-year free degree. These people are going to be trained to do one skill. They're obviously not going to be trained to the degree that they need to be trained in order to even perform that function to an acceptable level. And acceptable means consumers are going to be purchasing products and going and obtaining services from people who are ill-qualified. And if we have a whole generation of people who are going through this two-year program, who are getting this free government handout, who are ill-equipped to even do the job that they're trained to do, and have no ability to think outside the box or be able to perform any other skill or any function, we have a serious problem coming to us when we talk about GDP and our economy in about 20 years.
Yeah. I just thought of something. Wasn't it just a few years back, maybe after his first election or a couple of years after or so, that wasn't he offering doctors and nurses to pay for just about all of their tuitions if they, I don't know, did something special with their, like kind of volunteered their services at clinics and stuff like that?
Which person was this?
Obama. For doctors and nurses in that.
I don't remember that. I know that in 2013, he set up this agreement with technical schools and corporations whereby, let's say that Google says we're going to need 85,000 machinists or chip makers by 2024. We're going to be growing this large. We're going to need this many of these types of employees. Here's our list. they hand it off to the technical school. The technical school says, okay, well, we can fill these positions if we have the trained people. The school boards in the K through 12 look at that and start assessing children in kindergarten and pre-kindergarten and say, what is their aptitude? Can they fill these positions? And you've got not just got one corporation, but thousands of corporations coming in with these requests for the future markets. What are they going to be selling? What do they need? What are their employee needs? And they need employees that will be able to fit the mold of the needs of the corporation. So they're going all the way to kindergarten and testing children's aptitude and slowly pushing them and nudging them off into these aptitudes where they would be interested in these technical employment opportunities, and then push them along into the technical schools, train them for those things, and then spit them out to the corporations, guaranteeing them a job with Google or Microsoft or Verizon. And to the student, they're like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I could be making all this money and I work for this cool company. And, you know, I work for Facebook and my CEO wears a hoodie to a board meeting. So I'm working for an awesome corporation, all the way, not even realizing that from the day they stepped into school, they were already chosen for that job.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to search for that, but I couldn't find the right terms or whatever. Nothing ever comes up unless you find the right terms, you know that. But yeah, it seems like I remember something. I wish I could remember more about it. Obama, it seems that he was, you know, just as about, they were about to push the Obamacare thing. When did he get that passed? Like 2010? Is that when that was?
Obamacare? Yeah. Wasn't it 2012?
Was it? Okay.
I think so.
Maybe it was.
I know that he was looking for a lot of doctors to sign on and nurses to sign on and support it. A lot of doctors were threatening to stop seeing patients if they signed up for Obamacare. There was a lot of back and forth with that, especially when it first rolled out. There was a whole big kind of uproar. Physicians and nurses were saying, you know, that they weren't going to treat patients if they presented Obamacare.
Yeah. Well, I know there's been a lot of a hubbub about just healthcare in general. A lot of hospitals don't like to treat people that aren't insured. I know that they legally have to. I think there's some kind of a federal law still on the books that I think it's something like either 1/4 or 1/3 of the business that a hospital takes in has to be charitable. But a lot of them don't. A lot of them don't really adhere to that law, and they don't really care about it anymore.
I don't know if that's still on the books. It was prevalent when I was very, very young. Hospitals were still, because I was born in 77, hospitals and doctors were still seeing people. If they came through the ER, they were seen, whether they had insurance or not. But a strange thing happened in the 80s when the free-thinking boomers decided, hey, wait a minute, I can make a ton of money building a corporation. And they corporatized healthcare by creating these huge corporations who then purchased large amounts of hospitals in specific regions. Like in South Florida, Tenet Healthcare owns a massive amount of the South Florida hospitals. And they created the HMO. And they created all these other, you know, spin-offs of the HMO. And what you have now, and especially what was going on with the Ebola crisis. You know, by the way, if any one of your favorite writers or YouTubers or broadcasters or whatever told you that there was going to be an outbreak of Ebola here in the United States, stop listening to them, because obviously they were full of it. What really happened with Ebola is the problem that I'm describing right now. The corporatization of healthcare is not just with the big pharma, okay? All of these hospitals are now run as profit margin corporations. And so they are designed to upsell and get you to buy products, which happen to be surgeries and medicine and going in to see doctors and using their facility in order to get more money out of you. And you can't have a healing industry that is run by corporations. It just doesn't make any sense. The corporation is dependent because of their shareholders and investors to create this cash flow and constantly being selling their products to the customer, which happens to be patients who are in various stages of either dying or needing repair. And so there's a huge ethical issue here that has been completely skipped over. Nobody paid attention in the 80s when they started corporatizing healthcare. And then all of a sudden we've got these facilities who manage healthcare dependent on the statistical probability of things happening. And that's what happened with Ebola. It was like a 1 in a million statistically chance that that would ever happen. So they never trained their healthcare workers properly. They didn't even have the proper suits or protective gear in order to give them. And because they had such a lackadaisical training on this, they didn't know exactly what to do. And so people become exposed. People become infected. It turned into this whole other fear-mongering garbage. Meanwhile, our healthcare workers were striking because they are sick and tired of working under corporations. And the Ebola, quote, outbreak, which really is not an outbreak, only affected healthcare workers here in the United States because of the reason I just explained to you. And that's not a sensational enough story because nobody cares about healthcare workers until you need them. Then all of a sudden, you want to make sure that they have the proper certification. You want to make sure they know what they're doing. You want to make sure they come from a good family.
Yeah, kind of like a cop. You know, are you never there when you need, or they're always there when you don't need them, and they're never around when you need them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Except when we were younger.
Yes.
It was okay. You wanted the cops to come.
Sure.
Everything was going to be better when the cops got there.
Yeah, you could
if
trust
something
them.
Was going on. If somebody was trying to snatch you, you stopped that cop. You know, and ran up to the car and got him over there. There was a little girl who was some guy tried to steal her at the bus stop where we all stood. There was about 10 of us, and two of the adult parents waited with us. And that day the parents weren't there, and this little girl, this man approached her and tried to actually grab her, and the rest of us ran down to the street and flagged down a cop and told him what to do. I mean, nowadays kids don't ever do that. They wouldn't even go near a cop.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, one of their friends would be abducted, and they would somehow have to deal with that. But that's the reality that we live in, because cops became violent. Pops, when we were kids, the police state started. I mean, when I graduated high school, the last year when I was a senior, they implemented the metal detectors. I went to one of the most prestigious high schools in my area, Coral Gables Senior High. We had 95% of us went off to Ivy League colleges.
How many?
95%.
Wow.
Of our graduating classes, statistically, went off to Ivy League colleges. So, and I went to basically 90210. It was like 90210 in my high school. They had the big clunky cell phones. They drove BMWs. We even had cops standing outside, and we knew the cop who patrolled the area, and he was really a nice guy. We all hung out with him after school. Totally different as you move into changes in our society when police started coming out in aggressive forms. Now they're in aggressive suits. You have a complete change of aggression toward protesters. Think, go back to the 60s. They had billy clubs, and they had they would spray them down with water. And even though that's terrible, and everybody got the stuff kicked out of them, now they show up like Terminator. And they form these huge lines, and they have massive amounts of like armored cars behind them, and all sorts of aggressive cars. It's not like the streets of San Francisco type police officer, and that's what's facing you.
Yeah,
it's absolutely intimidating, and it's terrifying, and it is meant to be that way. And the change has only happened in 40 years. That's pretty quick for me.
Yeah, it is. I think that's probably around the same time that they started looking to the military for their goons, for their brainwashed personnel, their police officers that would just follow orders blindly without question. At least I don't know. It seems like it, anyways.
I've been looking at like pictures of protests in the 60s and the 70s, the way the police officers engaged the protesters. And I realize that I'm just looking at depictions that were taken then, and it's not the total story. But it seems very clear to me that the skirmishes that happened in the 60s and the 70s have now been analyzed and gone over, and the game plan has changed. George Bush Sr. opened up the doorway to 1033, the 1033 program, which allowed the DOD and the Pentagon to sort of create this pathway for all the police departments to purchase all of this gear. And over time, they've been assessing that. And that's been since basically right after the Reagan years. That's a really long time. That's like 30, 40 years, right?
Reagan ended his term in 88.
Okay. All right.
26
from
years.
89, from 89 to the early 90s, we have this time when the New World Order is being introduced on television, right? 1,000 points of light. We're going to build a new world order.
Yes. 91.
Exactly.
Reagan, Pappy Reagan's speech there.
Right.
Yep.
This is incredible because this is part of the programming and part of the rhetoric that I grew up with. The idea of a new world order. The idea that wars are destroying and our society, the way that it's built, is destroying us. And we need to fix it by not throwing the baby out with the bath or throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Starting a completely new way of doing things where everybody is lumped up into this one big thing. Because obviously, individually, we're not handling our business very well. Very incredible idea to come out on national television as the president to imbue this into the audience. And then everyone watching that started to see New World Order theme coming out slowly in the movies and in the music. Anti-Russia turning into anti-Muslim now. You know, we hated the Russians. McCarthy was really on the hunt for lots of commies in Hollywood. And it morphed into the Cold War with Russia, which for them created a huge manufacturing boom, and it was wonderful. But for us, it made us absolutely stagnant when it came to interacting with people. Lots of new fears that the everyday man never even thought of, that, oh my God, somebody is a spy. Oh my God, somebody could be infiltrating me. This idea gets passed down through the generation. You think about it. The Silent Generation had the McCarthy hearings and they were exposed to that idea. And they passed that down to their baby boomer children. And the baby boomers took that up as, hey man, the government hates you. They're spying on you, man. They're doing all the stuff. And it comes down into the Generation X, and Generation X is like, well, God damn it, I can't trust anyone. Can't trust my parents. Can't trust my friends. Can't trust the government. Who can I trust? Damn it, I'm kind of screwed. And then you have the millennials who come back around and said, hey, this is our community. We don't have to have your kind of New World Order. We can have another kind of New World Order. We could have a communal New World Order where we're all setting up these communities, and Agenda 21 is just awesomely in line with millennial thinking. And it makes total sense to a millennial because everything is community. And why shouldn't you share in your job and share in your food and share in your life? I had an interesting moment today at the grocery store. I was watching two millennials talking to each other. They both had children, and they were showing off their children to each other in a very unique way. I noticed that they were complimenting them on the accessories they had for the children. They liked the baby carrier. One liked the shoes. The other one liked the haircut. The other one liked the toys. They all wanted to know where to buy them and where to get them. And they were very trendy, the two couples. It was very cute to see how much money and how much time and energy they put into. The guy had a full-on beard, but it was very well-trimmed. You know, it was like Grizzly Adams went to a beauty parlor and got it all, you know, unfizzied, and he looked great. And this kid's probably about 26 years old. And the wife is dressed all beautifully and perfectly trendy, and they're trendy children. And then I saw a Gen Xer walking down the street as we were leaving the grocery store, and we were crossing the street, and I was putting away my groceries. I was walking the cart back to the little carriage area, and I noticed this Gen Xer walking down the street, and she was playing on her phone. She was texting, and her probably about 5 or 6 year old boy was walking next to her, holding the groceries. It was one small bag. And he had this blank stare on his face. His mother didn't even look to see if he was beside her. Huh. She was busy on her phone.
Yeah.
Two totally different ways of looking at their children.
Yeah.
And how they view their children, whether their child is an accessory or something that a shadow. These children are going to take these ideas of society and culture and relationships and how you relate to people and what's important, and they're taking all of that, they're sucking it all in, and when they turn 20, they're going to be unleashed onto the world. It is extremely important that we understand how we raised our children, how we were raised, how our parents were raised, how their parents were raised. And you can go back as far as you want. And it's vital that you consciously raise your children, because they are the next generation. The generation that's coming up now, which my children are part of, is the homeland generation. And ironically, they are being raised by late-term Generation Xers, which I am myself. And we got the end of the X programming and the beginning of the millennial programming. So we're kind of a little bit of a mixture of both. But we have silent generation values. And silent generation are our grandparents. And so these children are going to be technologically advanced with silent generation values of conservatism and respect for authority and respect for elders and respect for community. But the self-confidence to stand up and say, you can't infringe on that. I have that by right. That is an amazing generation, an amazing mix of the people who came out of the war, who understand the value of life and who understand the value of community and respect for each other, but also being able to integrate into the technological age that we are in, because we are in it. It's not changing. Sorry about it, folks. We're not going back to the 60s. We're not going back to the 40s. We're not going back to the Wild West. It's here to stay. That generation, I think, is going to be the one that will finally swing the pendulum back to the center. The millennials are acting like they're grandparents. They are spoiled and petulant, and they need everything now. It's instantaneous. I saw this article last night that blew my socks off. Are you ready for you want to hear something shocking?
Well, don't forget, we only got about 3 minutes left, but go ahead.
Okay. I'll make this quick.
All right.
Millennials have decided that they don't want to take the pill or any kind of birth control, like the injection. They don't want any hormonal pharmaceuticals in their body. So here's what they're doing. They're using the rhythm method, but they're using it on an app on their phone. They're taking their temperature, they're putting their temperature into this app, and this app is tracking their ovulation cycles. That is what millennials are about. Okay, that says it right there in a nutshell.
Healthcare.
They
for
are
an
ignorant
app.
Enough to use the rhythm method, and they are trendy enough to use the Google app to help them use the rhythm method.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that the rhythm method does not work. Lots of people were born on the rhythm method. Probably a lot of people. Raise your hand. I can't see you, but I'm sure you're there. That is the crux of the millennial mindset. They are not longevity. They have no coping skills, and they are going to rise like they are rising right now, and they're going to crash just as hard. The generation after them, hopefully, will be able to bring some sense to this planet.
Well, we got just 2 minutes left here, so what are we going to talk about? You want to talk about CBD, Beyond CBD some more, or again?
No, I go to beyondcbd.com.
BeyondCBD.com,
Gen
yeah.
Xers, go to beyondcbd.com. I know that your boomer parents watch the Reefer Madness, but that has nothing to do with medical marijuana. This is pure CBD extract. There is no hemp paste. That hemp paste is full of toxic solvents and heavy metals and God knows what. We took the hemp paste out, and we're just giving you the cannabidiol. It's pure CBD in hemp seed oil, and that's it. So let me give it to you straight. One of our bottles is worth 4 of the RSHO bottles, syringes. And you know how much 4 of those cost? It's a lot of money. So if you want the same amount without all of that hemp paste, because still you got to take 4 of those syringes full of hemp paste, and you just want pure CBD, go to crystalpurecbd.com. We have current laboratory tests up there, so we're not trying to hide anything. It's absolutely pure. It's 99.8% pure, and the constituent that we use is 99.999% pure. So crystalpurecbd.com.
And people can see you, can catch you on Facebook at Suzanne
Facebook at Real Suzanne Posel.
Posel.
And Twitter, OcuCorporatism. I'm on Google Plus. I'm also on Sue. I'm on Facebook. I'm on World Truth. I'm
OccupyCorporatism.com.
OccupyCorporatism.com, TheUSIndependent.com. I'm always doing interviews at least once a week, so you'll catch me somewhere. And I do have a radio show coming sometime in the very near future, so watch out for that.
And also right here on PSN Radio, Saturday nights from 10 to 11. So this has been Boomer vs. X. I'm Stephen Roberts, and we're out of here, everyone. Thank you.